Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 424. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, The Power of Thanks and Giving, where we talked a little bit about the history of the Thanksgiving holiday and had some interesting and unique perspectives from a Masonic point of view with some papers that we read. If this is the first time listening to this program for you, just want to remind you that there are 422 other episodes. We've been doing this podcast quite a long time, so we've got plenty out there for you, all free of charge, of course, and all with the expressed purpose of pushing out Masonic education. We've got a great show this week. We're going to keep it concise and to the point. So before we pay the bills, I just wanted to go ahead and throw a shout out once more to the online Great Books program. You'll hear about it in a few seconds, but just to let you guys know, open enrollment happens again on January 6th. So start socking away a little bit of money because, let me just say, it's a wonderful program, and if you decide to do it, you use the promo code WCY, and you're going to get 25% off of the cost of that program for the first 3 months. It's a great deal. Next, please do click on our friends on our website, WCYpodcast.com. Click on Franklin's Fortune. Read all about it. It is a wonderful game that you can play with your family. I know you won't be bored with it. It's a lot of fun, and it takes some skill to master. And last but not least, before we just pay the regular type bills, I should mention I was contacted by Brother Francesco Salomni, who is a photographer. If you're somebody in the New York City area, as well as the Long Island / New Jersey areas, and you need some studio portraits, you can contact this brother through his website, which is francescophotography.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. If you use the promo code WCY20, you'll get a 10% off of your final product, and an additional 5% of whatever you do is going to come back to this podcast. So keep that in mind if you need some new headshots and you live in the New York City area, new headshots for the new year. Now let's go ahead and pay the normal bills, and then we'll get right into the education for this week. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together. And I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program, and in the last 10 years Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. So the two education pieces I have for you this week both come from two newer editions of the Illinois Lodge of Research Transactions. If you would like to read these in full, I would recommend that you become a member of the Illinois Lodge of Research, and you can do that by contacting us at IllinoisLodgeOfResearch.com. I will, of course, include the PDFs of what I'm reading for you here, but to get the full transactions of both issues, you'll need to be a member. Here's the first piece, and it's by a good friend of mine. He was the executive secretary of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education. I think he still is. His piece is called, Are We Producing Too Many Unfinished Masons? Most brethren would agree that there are three great driving purposes to modern Freemasonry. 1, individual self-development. 2, community and charitable service. And 3, Masonic fellowship, including social relations with family and friends. And the most central of these is the first, to provide opportunities and guidance to a Mason for developing his potential as a person to the fullest extent to which he is capable. While this mission extends to the limits of the total human being and seeks to encourage personal growth in all facets of life, Masonry in particular strives to enhance that moral stature of the man. The fraternity endeavors to bring this about by means of education, ritual memory work, in-lodge experiences with our degrees, and the modeling of exemplary Masonic behavior by more advanced members during all encounters. The outcomes of this development effort are seen in the Mason's behavior and attitudes that are reflected, the way he thinks, speaks, and acts in everyday life. It is seen in the moral choices that he makes, the way he treats others in stressful situations, and in the multitude of small things he does and says while carrying out his various life roles. Freemasonry sets forth standards of thought and behavior toward which the committed Mason will continue to strive throughout his life. We call it building his spiritual temple. In order to continue this learning and development process, a Mason needs to be regularly exposed to these standards, to consistently practice these more perfect behaviors, and to occasionally measure his efforts against the standards and evaluate his progress. Sure, there will be shortfalls, bursts of temper, feelings of jealousy or envy, taking unfair advantage, and doing or saying hurtful things. But the true mark of development is the recognition that one can and should rebound from such slippages and renew efforts to remain on the true Masonic path. Given these standards and the development process, what happens to those newly raised Masons who never or very infrequently return to the lodge? The brief and often ineffectual exposure he receives to these standards during the three degrees and the memorization of the catechism will not permit him to fully pull back the veil of allegory and so immerse himself in our standards that they will remain in his consciousness as a guide for the remainder of his life. He may be called truly an unfinished Mason. I imagine there are Masons who don't return to the lodge, but who, over the course of their lives, sustain a study of the reflection of our standards through Masonic literature and make a comfortable effort to live according to the principles of our craft. But honestly, how many of our absent brethren are made of such endeavoring stuff? I would suggest very few. Knowing that we will likely never be able to keep all the new members actively attending lodge and thus regularly exposing them to the standards and values, what can we do to finish our Masonic Ashlers as fully as possible given these limitations? I would suggest that we have indeed embarked upon an approach that will do exactly that. And although it is admittedly not a perfect solution, it should serve us well until we do find the ultimate means. What is this method? Nothing more than our intender candidate education program. but what potential it offers if we employ it to its limits. Now please note, I am not advocating the singular adoption of a short-ended catechism. In fact, many of our Grand Lodge officers now believe that we should first attempt to stay with our traditional catechism and save the shortened one for those who truly are unable to memorize lengthy materials, especially if it's a matter of forever losing a brother before he is raised. No, I am focusing on just the candidate education program as offered in the four intender booklets. When aggressively presented with the traditional catechism and supported by the conscientious coaching, this program can launch our new members well along the path of enlightenment. To understand our history, symbols, and philosophy, and apply the underlying principles to all future behavior, it will not provide him with a smooth finish that a lifetime of Masonic participation would, but it will certainly advance him farther along than he would travel with just the programs that has been in use. So here is my challenge to Illinois Freemasons. If you and your lodge want to avoid producing more unfinished Masons in the years to come, I implore you to take this candidate education program seriously and to use it with each new brother assiduously. Those lodges which have been diligently using the Intender program over the past years are reporting some remarkable results, not the least of which is a revival of interest in their longtime members in obtaining a set of booklets on their own and learning their valuable contents. So, that's this piece by Ed Rund. And it's really interesting because what we're doing here is he's talking about this idea that we're just letting them come in and not doing anything about it when they don't come back. This is a problem. So, what can we do about it? And he talks about the Intender program. The Intender program for us is a set of four booklets. One before you're a Mason, after you're an entered apprentice, after you're a fellow craft, and finally a Master Mason book. Each one has history, administrative things that we should know, how to act in the lodge. It also has some symbolism and esoteric qualities to it as well. And I would posit here that you don't have to have the Intender program. Granted, your lodge almost certainly has an education program somewhere, even if it's not being avidly pushed today. You probably had one in the past. Maybe it's time to dig that up. Or, if you have one, use it. We have to do this because it's only going to benefit our members who are going to come back and be full of that much more zeal for the institution, and they'll know more and be more comfortable. It's just a win-win-win. So before we move to the next piece, I just wanted to throw a quick plug out there to the Fraternal Review. I got my PDF version this week, and I got the print version in the mail December 2019, The Force and the Dark Side. Is the Force really with you? I don't know, but the Fraternal Review is a fantastic magazine. Inside this particular issue, there is a wonderful article here by a friend and brother. You probably know his name. I'm hoping you do. Brother Eric Marks. And he wrote a piece called Buddhism, the Force in Freemasonry. Eric Marks is a regular contributor to the Midnight Freemasons blog. So if you enjoy this article, then you're going to love him over there. And if you love him over there, you're going to love him in this magazine. How do you get this issue? You gotta go to their website, theresearchlodge.org. Also, in the back of the magazine, there's a great article by our friend and brother Michael Jarzebek, and he wrote a piece called The Force of Ritual. Again, wonderful piece, and Mike actually is doing some wonderful presentations out there now, and I couldn't be happier for him. If you want to meet him, I'll tell you this. I know for a fact you'll see him at MasonicCon Chicago, which you learned about last week, and our tickets went on sale, and they're booming. So for the subscribers to the email, you're going to be able to buy your general admission tickets starting on Monday morning, which is awesome. But back to the Fraternal Review and Mike Jarzebek. I'm almost positive he'll also be at Edelboro MasonicCon 2020 in April. So you're going to want to catch him there, too, if you like this. Maybe you should get this issue, and then you should bother him. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring my issue, and I'm going to have him sign it. In fact, I think I'm going to see him this weekend, so I'm going to have him sign my issue this weekend, and he's not going to know what to do. It's going to be awesome, especially when I put him on the spot. I love you, Mike. So, yeah, this week we're really pulling from research lodges nationwide, right? Illinois, the Fraternal Review, which is a magazine based for the Southern California Lodge of Research. It's an award-winning magazine, you guys. It's really cool, so I would urge you to check it out. I'll have a link back to that in the show notes also. So this next piece is a historical one, and it's called The Regency Era in Freemasonry. It's by Hilton Kaufman, past master. Hilton Kaufman is basically our lifetime editor-in-chief of the Illinois Lodge of Research Transactions. The man has published and written so much. It's pretty incredible. This comes from Volume 26, page number 15, Illinois Lodge of Research, The Regency Era, and Freemasonry by Hilton Kaufman, past master. Here we go. Freemasonry, or more simply just Masonry, was of interest to many of the more affluent gentlemen of the Regency era. That's like 1811 to 1820. There was considerable membership and participation in the fraternity or brotherhood. There was some prestige in participating in its supposedly secret and arcane rituals. Not everyone could join. A prospective member had to be sponsored, investigated as to suitability, and voted upon by secret ballot. Once initiated, a member of one lodge could visit many other lodges scattered around the world. A network of friendly relations existed so that one might have a wide area of social contacts. In many places, one might enjoy a fine meal before or after a meeting. While at least in theory, one does not join for mercantile reasons, business contacts are often found among its members. The rituals of Freemasonry permit those who are of the theatrical bent to enact various roles in a manner that can be entertaining to others. While it has been said that the rituals are morality plays, many members try their hands at performing these rituals. Others just try to understand the allegorical symbolism that is expressed to make good men better. Away from the higher levels of the fraternity and those lodges in the larger cities with noble or royal leaders, the lodges held to a more democratic perspective. An artisan or a tradesman might be elected as the master or leader of a lodge in which some nobility are members. The Masonic Brotherhood or fraternity most likely came in some way from working stonemasons and related tradesmen. Because this trade required a more than average education, philosophical discussions among the members often took place. It is thought that at one time some of the aristocracy and gentry joined lodges of actual working masons to learn about subjects known to this trade, such as geometry, as well as engaging in interesting discussions. Eventually, many of the lodges no longer had stonecutters and fitters among their members. By the time of the Regency era, the fraternity or brotherhood was separated from the organized lodges of actual stonemasons. Freemasonry or Masonry does not exist in a vacuum and has changed during its existence. The way it functions is influenced by events occurring in the world around it. Many of the customs of the Regency era in England are well documented in novels by Jane Austen and studied by individuals known as Janeites, who are dedicated to understanding her works. The availability of information concerning this era in England provides an opportunity to study how Freemasonry likely changes with the world around it. As Freemasonry spread around the globe, the way it was practiced in other locations was not the same as it was in England, especially as in and around London. It had spread to other places, such as the colonies, which became the United States of America. Each time and place might be worthy of a study of its own as to how Freemasonry and the world around it interacted. At the start of the Regency era, Freemasonry in England was split between two grand lodges. One was quite aristocratic and had made changes from the way things had been done in the lodges of stonemasons from which it probably came. The other had many members in the construction trades as well as mercantile and other middle-class occupations. It tended to practice Freemasonry in what they considered to be the quote-unquote ancient way. By 1812, both organizations had come to be led by Grand Masters who were sons of His Majesty, George III, by the grace of God of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland King, Defender of the Faith, although he was not a member. Even the brother of the King had become a Grand Master in 1782. It was well accepted among members of the upper nobility. During the period from 1811 to 1820, King George III had periods when he was deemed unfit to rule because of his mental condition. Most worshipful brother George Augustus Frederick, the Prince of Wales, served as the Prince Regent during this time. Because of this, those years and the surrounding time became known as the Regency Era. While King George III tended to be quiet and reserved, the Prince Regent, later George IV, was much more flamboyant and outgoing. This was a period of strong class differences with much formality in the upper classes. Many activities engaged in by men were forbidden to women, who could not go to some places unaccompanied. Yet women were starting to do things like writing books that were published in their own names. By the end of this period, the differences in clothing among the classes were less extreme than at the beginning. The Napoleonic Wars were taking place when the Regency began. Parliament was concerned about organizations that met in rooms that were guarded so that outsiders had no ideas of what was being discussed within. Although royalty and high nobility were involved, Parliament had to be convinced that it was an innocent organization and not a bunch of French spies or revolutionaries. Both English Grand Lodges as well as the Irish and Scotch ones had to put their differences aside to lobby Parliament concerning proposed legislation against secret organizations, so as to carve out an exception for Freemasons. The power of royalty was becoming increasingly limited in Britain. Parliament was exerting control, and the king was restricted in what he could do. The United Kingdom had become a constitutional monarchy. Most of the North American colonies had become independent, and others gained some measure of self-government. This left time for the Prince Regent to become more concerned with social rather than government activities. He could act as a style setter for the aristocracy, gentry, and more affluent tradesmen. It was during this time that the two rival Grand Lodges in England united to form the current United Grand Lodge of England. Of course, this was one of those activities that was exclusively male. Though a woman might be a member of a London company of Masons, which in theory controlled the operative trade in much of Greater London, Freemasonry, the social or fraternal organization, remained a bastion where the men could socialize without ladies to distract them. While clothing, very likely, was less formal in the ancient lodges, with their membership consisting largely of tradesmen, the style of dress in the more aristocratic lodges of the moderns changed from elaborate, colorful, multi-layered attire with knee breeches to simpler dark suits. As with the affluent population in general, it is likely that powdered wigs were worn to meetings prior to this time, but not after. The recently imposed taxes on wig powder were partially involved with the change, but Beau Brummel, a friend of the Prince Regent, led the way to a newer and more relaxed style of dress. Because of his interest in science, astronomy, and mathematics, King George III had earlier caused a change in the education of the aristocracy and gentry. While Masonic ritual might speak of and encourage study of the arts and sciences, individuals who could afford to join most likely had a decent education prior to seeking admission into the Brotherhood. This was no longer one of the few ways to gain such knowledge. With the unification of the Grand Lodges in 1812, there might be visits between members of previously aristocratic and middle-class lodges. And there you have that piece on the Regency era and Freemasonry. Kind of gives us some clues to the way we dress and some of the... Well, we say we're always on the level, but there's always some kind of a weird line that's drawn. You know, my mother lodge, Waukegan 78, was a product of Waukegan 324 and Union Lodge number 78, and they both merged because they didn't have enough guys to open during the Civil War, so they merged together to form Waukegan 78. Took the older charter number and the town that they were in, Waukegan, and they came together. But what was interesting was before that time, they didn't want to really join. It took like two or three votes to pass. And this is because Union 78 was mostly trades and Waukegan was mostly doctors and lawyers. And I might have those mixed up. It might be vice versa, but that was the case. And so they didn't want to join. It took a real act of basically saying that you both can turn in your charter or you can get along. And that's what they did. And it sounds like the insights here into the way it was back then, I mean, I'm left thinking, which one would I have been a member of? Well, I guess it depends on my skill set, right? I probably would have been part of the ancient lodges. I probably would have been a tradesman. But that's it for this week. I really hope you enjoyed. It's a little bit shorter of an episode. I do have to fly out of town this weekend, so I needed to get an episode together, and we couldn't not have one, right? We have to have our Masonic education. So I hope you enjoyed. Please check out the links in the show notes for our sponsors, to become a patron of the show, to support us through PayPal or Patreon, however you'd like to do that. Check out the Fraternal Review. Check out the Illinois Lodge of Research website. Follow the Illinois Lodge of Research on Facebook. We publish some really cool stuff every week. We've got a neat post that I pull from the Illinois Lodge proceedings from the Grand Lodge back in the day. And we just have a lot of fun with it, so I hope you enjoy that. It tends to spark a lot of conversation, actually. My many thanks to everybody out there who picked up tickets to the MasonicCon Chicago, the Executive Pass. We got a bunch of you guys. It's going to be fantastic. You guys are going to have some great stuff. And we're going to launch the general admission tickets come the 9th. And then on the 11th, we're going to open up tickets for everybody. Everybody and their mom. That's right. We are not tiling this. Anybody can come to this. It's open to the public. We'll all have a great time together. We talked about that last week. If you want to know more about MasonicCon, definitely go to the website. Definitely check all of it out. Get on the email list. And listen to last week's episode. I gave like a 10-minute update on MasonicCon Chicago. I hope you guys got super stoked. But that's it. I've got lots of stuff to do before I leave town. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.